Thank you. Thank you. Hello. My name is Nicholas Parsons. And as the minute waltz fades away, once more it is my pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country, but throughout the world, but also to welcome to the show this week four talented and experienced players of the game, who are once more going to display their spontaneous wit, their verbal dexterity and ingenuity, as they try and speak on the subject that I give them for 1 minute. And they do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviating from the subject. On my right is Paul Merton and Clement Freud, and on my left, Linda Smith and Ross Noble. Would you please welcome all four of them? Beside me sits Lottie Barker, who's going to help me keep a score, and she will blow a whistle when the 60 seconds are up. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the Marlowe Theatre in their beautiful cathedral, historic city of Canterbury. And we begin the show this week with Clement Freud. And how apt can you be? The subject is Canterbury Tales. Clement, tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
Geoffrey Chaucer wrote the Canterbury Tales and would have us believe that it was done on horseback by 31 people. He wrote, "At night there came into that hostelry," meaning the Tarbard at Southwark, "full 29 in a company of sundry folk, by aventure fall in fellowship, and pilgrims were they all that toward Canterbury wold and ride. The chambers and the stables were in wide, and well we were eased at our best. But shortly, here the sunny had to rest, so had I spoken to them every one that I was of their fellowship anon."
Linda Smith, challenge you. What's your challenge, Linda?
It was very lovely, but two fellowships.
Yes, there were the fellowships. You did repeat fellowship.
Well, you can't have too many,
that's
really,
Chaucer's fault. That's not Clement's fault. If anything, you should take a bonus point off Geoffrey Chaucer.
"And especially from every shire's end of England to Canterbury they wend.
Probably large portions of the population have never heard of Just a Minute, and never listened to Radio 4, as hard as it is to believe, and just wouldn't know, you know, anything about the programme. It's a brilliantly simple radio show. You don't need to see the visuals, and it is very difficult to do because it's almost impossible to talk for a minute on a subject without committing the three cardinal sins.
It's not something you're generally asked to do in life, speak without hesitation, repetition or deviation, really. And in comedy, you know, you build things, you do repeat and you sort of play on words. So it's the complete opposite of what you'd instinctively do just as a person and as a comedy performer, really. So you just have to sort of let go of all that and hope that your personality comes through in this completely unnatural way.
There was a Cook story as well, I believe, which involved a young boy on a moped who was going to...
Clement, challenge.
There was a Cook still. He didn't have a moped.
He didn't have a moped.
It was a Harley Davidson, wasn't it?
Yeah. In your fantasy world, maybe. What a pity.
Well, when I first started doing it, I used to talk really fast, because I just thought, if I talk fast, nobody will buzz me. But then I realised that it's actually better to talk slower, because then you've got more time to think. I used to go, and I thought, nobody's going to get me for hesitation. And then I realised that you can actually take your time, and if you relax with it, it's fine.
Clement, correct challenge. You have 8 seconds. The subject is now still Canterbury Tales, starting now.
The Canterbury Tales.
Ross, challenge.
Sorry, I forgot to mention, it was a donkey that looked a bit like a morphine.
It's too late now,
sorry.
Ross. If you're not careful, if you do in too many interruptions, the other people get points. But I won't charge any points on this occasion.
Why not?
Sorry.
Well, I suppose that's only fair. You were interrupted, and those are the rules of the game. That's how I work. Right, Clement? Another point to you. You love getting your points, and I'm giving you a good.
It's luck, isn't it? I mean, it's luck that nobody challenges you and that your mind is working sufficiently well and to think of something which is different from what you've already said. And you don't fluff. If just a minute is on in Canterbury at 7:30, until 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the day would belong to me. I mean, I would then start working out how I'm going to get to a location. I'm here because it was not too inconvenient for Canterbury, and I looked very carefully at the horses, and I picked three, and I backed them singly, in doubles, and in a treble, which is called a patent. And the first one has won at 4.5 to 1, so I can almost not lose. But never let will I have time and space here that I further in this daily pace to tell you all the condition of each of them, so as they seem to me.
Whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion was Clement Freud, so naturally he's in the lead at the end of that round. It made
Clement,
me think.
Clement just said that he knows the whole of the Canterbury Tales.
Well, we haven't got time for it all.
Have we? And, it's an achievement, though, isn't it?
Yeah, an achievement. Yes, I just think it shows. It's taken him all these years to show that his education wasn't wasted. No, I didn't mean that as a snide remark. Where else would you have an opportunity to recite the Canterbury Tales, except in just a minute? He learned them, he did this, and he's done it. He learnt it at school,
well,
and he's remembered it.
For example, at a Geoffrey Chaucer festival.
Yeah.
The show was devised and produced by Ian C. Messiter. I married a conjurer, I married a magician. And the story he tells, I'm sure it's true, in his autobiography, that it started in 1931, probably, when he was at school, at boarding school, not very academic, not very interested in Latin or whatever was going on, and was suddenly pounced upon by the master to try and tell the rest of the class what the master had been talking about. Ian had no idea, he'd been staring out of the window. And the master, his name escapes me now, but I did actually meet him, simply said, Messiter, stand up and repeat what I've been talking about without deviating, without hesitating, and without repetition. He couldn't. And the result of that was he had a terrible whacking that he never forgot.
Oh, my God. Ross, it's your turn to begin. Oh, what a lovely subject for this lovely part of the world in Kent, hops. Ross, tell us something about hops in just a minute, starting now.
Hops could be the name of a little rabbit that a tiny child has found in a nearby field all on its own, and she's gone over and picked it up and put it in a special case and taken it back to her home, where she will care for that said beast. It's not really, strictly speaking, an angry creature, and I used the word that I used before.
Oh. Clement.
Repetition of used.
Yes, yep. Use the word and use and also word. Right, fair dues, right. 42 seconds, Clement, a correct challenge. No, not 42 seconds for a correct challenge. You have 42 seconds available after a correct challenge, and the subject is hops, starting now.
Christopher Robin went hoppity, repeat 4 times, hop. When I asked him to stop, he said I couldn't possibly. Hops also grow in Kent and are an integral part of beer. You get the hops and you warm them until they are brown and lovely and smell toasty.
Oh, that audience were actually willing you forward, Ross. But you slipped up. Ross, you were the first to challenge.
Yes.
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 Well, you had to say
hesitation.
It. That's right, yes. Hesitation, correct.
Yes. You had sorry, he'd actually hypnotised me.
Well, he had the audience action.
I was great. Yes. Like that.
And the audience were much the same, mesmerised, actually.
Listen. Listen. Listen with your inner ear. Here I am myself again, contained in the bud of myself, the pure disdaining innocence curled with the worm. Happy, I listen and can hear no pain.
Ian learned his trade at BBC. The first thing, I think, he cut his teeth on was 20 questions. That was the first panel game that he was asked to produce. There was one terrifying occasion when he was asked to produce Itmar. And all of you are so young that you probably don't remember Itmar, but that was the programme that kept everybody going during the war. And Ian had never heard it, ever heard of it, because he lived with his extraordinary parents, who didn't like having a wireless in the house, because they were actors. They weren't people who really knew how the world worked. They were actors. He wouldn't believe the 9 o'clock news. He would rather refer to the Times to find out what happened. So he lived in a fantasy world. If he didn't like the real world, he could disappear into something else, his own imagination.
22 seconds, hops with you, Ross, starting now.
Hops were the type of dances that teenagers in America used to go to and enjoy fantastic rhythm and blues and possibly rock and roll. The Fonz was often seen at these particular events. Hops could be a type of car released by the Ford Motor Company. The new hops that would be seen leaping over fences and trees instead of going on a road.
The LE department, when I joined it, was a very old department. Most of the people had been recruited just after the war. So I think the average age was probably well over 50. Everybody seemed to have a triple barrel name. And a young man was sent round Oxford and Cambridge to look for some young people who might come in and rejuvenate the place a bit. Messiter sent in the idea, and I can't remember whether the idea came directly to me or whether it came to the head of the department who sent it to me. And then I looked at it and I thought it was a good idea, not least because the programme already had a history on radio, in that there'd been a programme called 1 Minute Please many years before, I think.
Roy Plumley was the chairman. The regulars were Yvonne Arnaud, a brilliant French actress. Frank Muir was on it. Dennis Norden was on it. Gerard Hoffnung, who became a great family friend. Gilbert Harding, who once had to be thrown off because he was drunk. And one of the most famous discoveries he made was Margot Holden, one of the Windmill girls, a very, very pretty girl. Who was brilliant because she talked like a dumb blonde, but actually had a degree in physics.
Score at this point 6 to the men against 2 for the women. Margot Holden, your ideas on fiddles.
Fiddles? Oh, well, they're instruments that people play. They usually find them in orchestras. It's really a common name, fiddle, for a violin or a viola or something.
Just the train. Why two bus?
I think that Margot was technically wrong.
Never mind about that.
Fiddles on. You don't call violas fiddles.
You can't buzz her for being technically wrong, Jack. Repeating herself, undue hesitation, or getting off the point.
Point? I don't mind. Oh,
carry on, Margot, for another 44 seconds.
Fiddles are musical instruments. People play them. They consist of a wooden shaped thing. I think they're made of a kind of a pine wood or something.
Yes, Mr. Hoffman.
Oh,
sunset. Oh, sunset, week after week, she says. Getting off the point.
Pour some water on his head, Eric, you're next.
Right,
heading towards the far
side. From Coonas Crescent,
division from Rushabout, who is back in the field.
Back markers,
Abbey Hill,
and over Canning
for a noble.
Hello.
Hello, Nicholas,
it's Claire here.
Hello, Claire. Looking forward to Canterbury.
Mm.
Who have we got in the team?
We have got Paul Merton.
Oh, lovely. Yes, there's always nice and Paul, don't you?
Linda Smith.
Oh, lovely to have Linda back. She's very good. She hasn't done it for a while.
Yeah. Ross Noble.
Oh, good old Ross. Been abroad a lot, hasn't he? So glad you got him again. That's great fun.
And Clement Freud.
And he's always good value, isn't he?
Excellent, yeah.
Well, you've got a great team there, so
it is.
It's tremendous fun.
Yeah, and it's a full house.
It's what, a full house already?
Mm-hmm.
It is amazing.
The most important thing in a panel game is to cast the chairmanship right. And I would say that one of the best decisions I made about I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue with Graham Garden was to choose Humphrey Littleton. It's absolutely essential to get the right chairman. And we chose Nick. Nick was a good straight man. We needed a straight man to do it. And he was very good at bouncing off other people. And we chose Nick. I don't think he was very pleased to be chosen as chairman. I think he wanted to be on the panel. I didn't want him on the panel. And despite his protestations, he's remained in the chair. And I think had a very good living from it. And I think he has made some money, really. But he always has been a very good chairman.
Yes, ready. It was a job that I didn't actually want, because I originally was going to be on the panel. And it all began because I just had a success on radio with a program called Listen to This Space, the first satire show on radio, which I actually devised, and we won awards with it, and it was very exciting. And I was very much the link person there, with everything revolving around me. And I wanted to get back to do the ad-lib comedy, of which I'd done a great deal on Cabaret and elsewhere, and also working with a comedian called Arthur Haynes.
Ooh.
Anyway, we did the pilot. It wasn't all that successful. In fact, the department didn't want it at all. It was only David Hatch who saw the potential and actually put his job on the line that we got the original pilot. And then David said, look, I'm sorry, they like the way you did the chairmanship. You're stuck with it. I said, oh, please, David. You know, I think my talent's more suited to the panel. And anyway, when you get a job in our profession, you know, and there's always the risk that you might lose it, you just think, well, it's work, and it could be a good show.
We spent about 8 or 9 months chopping and changing. And then Kenneth Williams came in after about 2 years. And then we settled down to Kenneth and Peter Jones and Derek Newman and me. And we went on for a very long time. I was unable always to be there because I was in Parliament and I wasn't allowed to appear when there was an election. And as one didn't know when there would be an election, I only did sort of 8 out of 12 in a series. So if an election or a by-election was called, they'd have to have one without me.
Why tomorrow must be better is because built into the human psyche is a natural optimism and expectation of better things to come. That somewhere around the corner will be Mr. Right, who will sweep you up in strong arms and carry you off on a white charger into some land. What's the matter?
Yes,
it just seems to be very devious that Mr. Right is going to sweep Kenneth Williams off into a white charger.
As a matter of fact, when I was ugly sister, I was swept up by Mr. Right.
Kenneth had an extraordinary quality of being able to
spread both gloom and joy. And if he decided it was a gloom day, I mean, he would come into the dressing room and reduce us all to deep concern. I mean, he would commiserate with Derek about a theatre notice, which he probably hadn't got. Tell me how awfully badly my political party was doing. And tell Peter Jones his flies were open. And say in no time there were three of us who were reduced.
Kenneth always sat here, Freud there, Peter Jones there, myself over there. And as the programme started, and Freud might be talking in his very slow, lugubrious way, I took this dog out for a walk yesterday. Kenneth, by this time, would have his trousers rolled up and be flaunting his leg under Freud's nose and Freud's face, and then go over and nuzzle him up against his beard, stroking him, and Freud would still go on without being interrupted at all.
He was always performing, you know. I don't know whether he had files or whether he just talked about them all the time, but he would come in with a limp and strut around the room and stagger onto the stage and make noises of pain and distress, and long before the microphones were switched on, he'd then announce where he was going to give autographs and where people should start queuing up after the show and welcome his mother and his aunt. He had a claque, and he had 10 or 12 really fairly inadequate people who would be in the audience. And they never had the guts to clap. They'd sort of do that. I did a piece for a magazine. I'm going to listen because I want Caltados to win this race. And it's running.
Jim Rice's challenge.
Two weathers.
Two weathers?
Whether it was so-and-so weather.
What is the matter, you great fool? I have come all the way from Great Portland Street. I'm not going to be made a fool of by that great jerk. Very rude to me before this show began.
Was he? What did
yes.
he say?
I said it's an all-male panel on tonight, and he looked at me and said, "What on earth?"
The ghost of Kenneth Williams still looms, you know. I think, you know, he was the master of that. And then, you know, I think Graham Norton sort of, you know, you can't have Graham Norton on anything without him doing it. You know, if you said sorry, Graham, but no innuendo allowed, you know, I think that'd be, you know, that'd be pushing it a bit, really.
Kenneth Williams was hysterical, I mean, hilarious. Terrifying. How could anyone, you know, cope with it? I don't know what I'd do. I'd much rather listen to him than work with him. I'm sure it was like a... There was something... I know Nicholas doesn't agree with this, because I remember I said this to Nicholas, and he said, oh, he just remembers it as being really good fun. But listening to it, there's a sort of edge of... I suppose I'm bringing to it a lot of what you know about Kenneth Williams and his life and... sort of quite how strange it was, really, his private life. But there's something sort of out of control about it, which is hilarious to listen to, but something ferocious about it as well. Something I find, actually, just there's just a slightly sinister edge to it, really.
And Paul Merton, it's your turn to begin, and the subject is the gutter press. Oh, yes. Yes, tell us something about that in this game, starting now.
The gutter press, yesterday's trees, tomorrow's fish and chips. Not many people take much notice of what they read in the gutter press, apart from, of course, the individuals who are featured. Imagine your embarrassment if you were caught consorting with prostitutes and taking cocaine. What an enormous, terrible thing that would be for you to have to appear on television while people pointed fingers at you. And general laughter. It's an incredible thing that this should happen in this day and age. Here we are in the 21st century. Why can't show business stars spend the BBC licence payers' money as they see fit? If they find a strumpet in a hotel, give her 50 quid. She's probably worth it.
Linda, you challenged.
Partly just, you know, out of common decency, really. But also...
Who are you protecting?
Well, who knows? I don't know what you get up to, Nicholas.
So, no, I've got to have a challenge within the
Rules of Justice. No, the challenge was a repetition of hotel.
Really? Yes, yeah. You mentioned...
Are you sure about
yes.
it, Nicholas?
Earlier
I think
on
I did.
You said in the hotel room, and then you said in the strumpet in this other hotel.
Oh, yeah, yes, different indeed. Hotel, you see.
Yes, two hotels.
Same chain, but different hotel.
I did that just a minute yesterday. Oh, it was awful. Some dreadful man came up onto the stage after and said, "Do you fulfill the strictures of Lord Reef, who said that everything should be for the great glory of Christianity?" I said, "Oh, shut up." I said, "People like you wear me out." And he said, bless you, my son, God's blessed." I said, "Don't give me that crap. I don't want to hear it." "All right, I will pray for you." I said, "Don't bother. As your presence here today has been embarrassing. You cause nothing but vexation, like so many of your religious friends."
Of course, the four regulars were Kenneth, Derek Nimmo, Clement Freud and Peter Jones. And I did one of the first shows after, you know, after he died. And they were all talking about him afterwards, after the recording. And clearly, even though they'd been doing this show 20 years with him, none of them really sort of knew him that well. And it's, you know, it was like you're just talking about a man you sometimes see go past your front window on his way to post a letter. None of them really knew him that well. And I think that was a kind of feeling of the show in those days.
Many people thought that that was going to be the end of Just a Minute. And in fact, after he died, the viewing figures picked up. And we had very many more, sorry, the listening figures. There are people who watch their radios, but it was actually the...
I know that sounds fantastic to see.
But after Kenneth, the BBC determined that no one should be brought in and become the next Kenneth Williams.
And I remember, actually, they decided we weren't going to do another series. And we were saved by the World Service, so I was told, because the World Service said, "This is our most popular show around the world, and if you don't do it, Mr. and Mrs. Radio 4, we will do with the recordings." And you know the internal jealousies that go on at BBC. They say, "Oh, no, no, it's our show." So Radio 4 said, "Right, we'll do another series."
This is Pat Butler calling British forces in Gibraltar.
This is Marjorie Anderson calling British forces in India and Ceylon.
This is Michael Brook calling Malta.
The subject is the things in my handbag.
Oh, and we've got half an hour instead of a minute, you know.
But you've got to do it without hesitation or repetition.
All right, well, I can do that.
May I interrupt just for a moment? I'd like to ask this because it fascinates me. I noticed that last time Nicholas told us the score, you were at the bottom. And I couldn't quite understand that, since you are the only one of us who's been able to speak for a whole minute without deviating or interrupting or repeating or anything.
It translates all over the place, you know. I mean, certainly whenever, you know, whenever I'm doing gigs, you know, I do gigs all over the world, you know, and you know, I've had people come up to me in South Africa and say, you know, "We listen to it on the World Service," and and Singapore as well.
Laura, you have 60 seconds to talk on things in my handbag, starting now.
Well, we were once at the studios and we were waiting for
some
lighting to
be done. I don't think it'd be fair.
Well, you talk about things in your handbag.
A guy came up to me in Edinburgh several years ago when I was up there for the festival, and he said, "I heard you on Just a Minute during the summer. It was very good." I said, "Well, thank you very much." He said, "I was crossing the Nairobi desert in a jeep, and he tuned into Just a Minute on the World Service." And I think that's extraordinary, that a programme like this goes out all over the world, like China or India or whatever, and that, you know, people can enjoy it.
And what people make of it abroad, I don't know. I presume they think we're all mad here. But it is a great way of learning English. I mean, there were some wonderful... Clement and Derek and Kenneth in my time were great exponents of the English language. And even if they were stopped in their tracks after 15 seconds, it was a good 15 seconds.
At the third stroke, the time sponsored by Accurist will be 12 o'clock precisely.
Linda, it's your turn to begin, and the subject here is osteopathy. Do you know much about it? If not, whether you do or not, you still have to try and talk the subject, and 60 seconds are available starting now.
Osteopathy is practiced by osteopaths, who are very clever people who can tell where you've hurt yourself just by when you scream, "Oh, blimey, that really hurts, stop doing that, I'll give you 50 quid, I won't even stay an hour." It's quite amazing how it works. Some people might think that the word osteopathy means some mad person who hates oast houses, which would make...
Was it repetition of person?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, well, he is right.
Yes, he is right.
I heard that.
I know. You weren't actually listening, were you?
I wasn't, no.
No, right. And you also repeated hurt, but it's too late now. Right, I have to say that sometimes because I get letters saying, "Do you know she repeated hurt?" And you didn't challenge her for it. I don't challenge, I have to write back and say. The others challenge it, they miss it. It's not my responsibility to tell them. I know you're bored to death with all that, but I have to say it. Stop the letters coming in. Right, 39 seconds, osteopathy with you, Ross, starting now.
Osteopathy is the word used to describe general ambivalence towards ostriches. Obviously, Bernie Clifton used to suffer from this on a regular basis. He would be riding around on that particular beast and he would have to bring in special people that could do the job that was needed. And I haven't paused. Don't go thinking I paused there because I didn't pause, don't even.
Challenge.
Repetition of pause.
Yes, don't think I've paused there. I've paused there.
I'd met Nicholas on a TV show and we sort of like hit it off quite well. And he's just said, "Oh, you know, you ought to come and you ought to try for just a minute one day. I think you'd be quite good at that." So I sort of, that stuck in my head. And so he phoned me up and he said he wanted to know what I was going to be wearing. I think it was like as if, I think he had in his head that he didn't just engage Sid Vicious. He said, "Well, what do we normally wear, sort of jackets and ties and that sort of thing?" I said, "Well, yeah, that's, I can sort of, you know, that's what he thought, I was going to come in the nude or something." And we don't swear on the show. It's very much a show where we don't use those words. And I said, "Oh, that's fine." I mean, I was only just 30, so I was sort of relatively new to the environs of Radio 4.
It's like the chairman is the teacher and we're the sort of naughty children, or the chairman's the kind of manager and we're the sort of recalcitrant workers, in a way. I think that's the dynamic of it, really. If that got out of control, then the whole show would fall apart. You couldn't have anarchy for just a minute. But it's just the nature of people doing it. Comedians are naturally going to be sort of in conflict with the authority figure, even if they're not exactly General Pinochet, if they're only, you know, the sweet and lovely Nicholas, he's still the figure of in authority, so therefore he's the one you're going to be, you know, cheeky with.
Linda, you have 11 seconds on osteopathy starting now.
Osteopathy could mean someone who couldn't be bothered to go to Austria, in which case I would suggest they chose another...
Poor challenge.
Deviation.
Why?
Well, it doesn't mean that. But I mean, it could mean that. You could say this table could be a horse. If it is, the glass will fall off. But it's not.
But you could say it.
You could say that. And
but how do you define deviation then, if you say, well, it could be that?
No, because she didn't say
it
was that. It would be deviation if she said it was going to Austria or a version of going to Austria. She said it could mean that in some people's minds. So I think she stated her case very adequately.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Sounds like a new rule to me.
No, it's an interpretation of the rules that exist, as far as I can see. Mm. It's a structure. They do give me a tough time, don't they?
They won't like this in the year 2068, I tell you.
You could have challenged, but it's too late now, for osteopathy. It's got nothing to do with Austria. It would have been then osteopathy.
I've no idea what's going on.
I think the audience with that reaction was saying, no one likes a clever dick.
challenge comes in, but it's just a thing that actually Paul Merton's adopted recently. And he suddenly challenges me and says, you're not sure, are you? You don't know. I mean, are you sure about that, Nicholas? Are you sure? And he suddenly throws it back on me. And of course, Clement does it differently. He looks at me. You can't possibly say again, you know, as if I haven't remembered correctly, as if my judgment could be wrong. And the others have different ploys. You know, they have different tactics, and I know it all. I get it from the eyes and so forth. They all have their inner game they're playing at me.
To be able to control that many egos all vying for points and laughs all at once and not go completely insane, you know. Or maybe he has.
I think the skill of any chairman in any show is to ensure that a good product goes out in which there's a reasonable amount of parity, fair play, and as chairman you don't talk just for the sake of talking, but you talk if you have something to say. I think he's a fair chairman, I think he's a clever chairman, I think he's a particularly bright chairman, but as a performer he is extremely effective, and that is certainly a strength.
You know, Clement's always having a go at him for, you know, for whatever Clement decides he wants to have a go at, for being unjust or, you know, whatever it happens to be. Everyone's got their own little thing that they like to. Paul always has a go at him for being a bit mental, which is, yeah.
When you hear somebody sort of being buzzed for repetition, you know, 2 seconds before the whistle goes and stuff like that. I think some panellists observe when the whistle goes into the whistleblower's mouth and they buzz just before then. I've not mentioned any names. But but Clement does it. I don't tend to do it.
People come up to me and say, I know what you do, you wait till the last second before a subject and then you buzz. And I have to point out that I buzz when people transgress the rules of just a minute, and if it happens to be 1 second before, that is their bad luck or my good luck. But it certainly isn't something one does, because people with any sense are particularly careful when the bonus point is up for grabs towards the end of a program.
Clement Freud occasionally appears to really want to win.
His jokes can come across as being rather cruel at times.
That's because they are very cruel.
Yes. Nicholas certainly has got... He knows how to handle that. If there is any sort of real malice in what is happening, either Nicholas will cope with it or Claire will cut it out.
And why is Clement's jokes, or why does Clement try to intimidate the chairman as opposed to the rest of the panel?
He doesn't like him.
I think he'll snap. At some point in the future he'll snap. The cravat will be off and he'll be flying across the desk. Yeah.
Well, this is Father Christmas, sir.
Oh, no, it's not, mate. He's an actor. He's an out-of-work actor, he's just told us, mate. I mean, all these people, they paid their 5 shillings all in good faith round here to see Father Christmas, not an out-of-work actor. I mean, if I want to see an actor, mate, I can go to a theatre to see an actor. I don't have to come here to see an actor. And I can see better actors than what you...
Quiet! Sir, will you get out here or do I send for a policeman?
Oh. Oh, you're going to start sending for coppers now, are you? Well, let me tell you something. We've paid £5 to come in here and he hasn't had his gift yet. I want my gift before I leave here.
Parsons, give him his gift and let them go.
Well, there we are. Harold, there's your gift. Now, clear off. Go on, hop it. Go on.
Don't you start chuffing him about, mate. I'll tell you that.
Now, I've been a straight man to a number of comedians, both living and dead. And as a straight man, you know how to throw out the lines so the comic will have a good springboard to come back and make some facetious or humorous or witty response. And also you know how to take the joke at your expense, because the comedian, the straight man in a relationship, is always the one who's put down. Also, you need to be aware, I'm aware of the fact that it's my responsibility to keep the show moving, to keep it taut and up there, and also I'm continually throwing out the odd line for whoever it is. I get to know them all, you know, they all work in different ways, which way they were most likely to come back and make some humorous comment, and sometimes at my expense, in fact, quite frequently at my expense. So you enjoy the joke with them, and if the audience know that you're enjoying the joke at your expense, they laugh as well, it increases the comedy, and then just when I think it's getting a little bit too over the top, I pull it all together again and we get on to the next subject.
Osteopathy with you, Linda, having got another point. 5 seconds available starting now.
Osteopathy can be found if you look in the...
Paul Challenge.
Repetition of Canby.
Yes.
But I was saying Canby Island.
Could be. Canby Island.
She did say could be before.
What's that?
She did say could be before. She
did Clement, thank God someone's listening.
Sadly, it's only one of us.
I know.
Okay, sorry.
So, Linda, you have another point. You have 3 seconds. Osteopathy is starting now.
Osteopathy has come in for a lot of misinformation this afternoon, and I think it's a really poor...
In all 35 years we've done this show, we've never thought of this subject. It's 1 minute. Because you have to talk for 1 minute. But can you now talk for just a minute on 1 minute, starting now?
1 minute can be fast, slow, medium pace.
Ross Challenge.
No, it's a minute.
I'm talking about the world of perception. If you're drowning underwater, a minute's quite a long time.
And that's what you were leading to say, I'm sure, but yeah. What you actually said was 1 minute can be slow or fast. It can't. 1 minute, Ross is right. It's deviation. 1 minute is 60 seconds. It's counted down per second, according to the whatever...
Were you confused by what I said?
No. I understood exactly where you were going. You were going into one of your surreal areas, but you didn't preface that. You just said 1 minute...
Should I make a special noise? I'm going into a surreal area. I'll be at the hooter. Beep! Beep!
I think it would... You're just covering up the fact you've got access to time travel.
Well... There's quite a few people out there thinking, oh, well, he might have. Yeah. Sort of bloke he would.
Do you think he'd be here today?
I think, Ross, you got in very rapidly. I think it would be very unfair not to give it to you for a deviation. Thanks. So you have 57 seconds on 1 minute starting
I
now.
I deviated 3 seconds I was talking for.
your opening remark was utterly devious.
Was
so
it?
I think Ross was entitled to have it. I know. Listen, this is just a minute. These are the rules. Who's running it, you or me?
Sometimes it seems it can last forever. If you're going well, you've started with a subject, and you know you've been going for quite some time, and you think, well, I must be, and of course it's terrible to start thinking it, because it puts you off your stride, but you're thinking, oh, there can't be much further to go now, I must be nearly there. Sometimes they have done it in the past where it's quite a mean trick, because you can't see it, is that somebody, Clement perhaps, or gestures to the other panellists not to buzz. So you carry on talking and talking. I think I did it once, and it came out to be something like 1 minute 45 seconds or something. And I was just going puce, and I was repeating, I was hesitating, I was deviating, I was doing everything. I think that was in the early days to do that, and I think that was one of their ways of sort of showing that they liked me.
I get very often a strange illusion where time sometimes appears to stand still. Just refresh in a second. Now, I think all of us get this same illusion, and to me it happens most often with a clock on the wall. If there's a clock on the wall with a second hand that seems to tick silently from second to second, it sometimes happens that if you look up at it, it appears that the clock has stopped just for a short time. And then it carries on ticking away at its normal rate. Your brain fools you. It makes you think that you've seen the clock not from the time your eyes arrived at it, but actually from the time your eyes started to move towards it, which could actually be about a fifth of a second beforehand. So your brain actually stretches time for a fraction of a second to fool you into thinking you've seen something for longer than you really have. The main implication is stranger and stranger the more you think about it. Rather than you living consciously in real time, that is, you think you're experiencing the world when it happens out there, but in fact, you're probably only consciously experiencing the world about half a second after it's all happened.
57 seconds on 1 minute, please. 1 minute, please. That's what this show used to be called. On 1 minute, starting now.
I recently bought an album called The Best of Westlife, which was exactly 1 minute long. It must have taken quite a lot of time to actually find that particular piece of music that was...
Paul Chums.
Well, I think if it's that long, it's not really an album. It's more of a single.
Well, actually, it's not really a single, is it? It's a sample.
Yes.
How many times have you managed the whole minute?
Only once that I can properly remember.
And what was the subject?
Chickens. Yeah, I was talking about chickens, and for some reason I just, chickens just, I had loads of stuff about how Colonel Sanders and Ozzy Osbourne used to tour together. Basically, Ozzy Osbourne used to take the Colonel on tour so that he always had a ready supply of stuff to bite the heads off. And usually, I can usually go the longest on, as soon as I get onto just some mad kind of made up story, then you're laughing, you know, you can, yeah, you're off after that, you know.
And Ross, your turn to begin. 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
Cuddling your chickens is notoriously hard to do. They tend to move around quite a lot, especially if you're one of Ozzy Osbourne's friends, because he tends to bite the heads off them. For many years on tour, he actually had to employ Bernard Matthews to travel with him in order that his chickens were at the side of the stage ready for him to do the particular mouth action, which required the pop fans to go, hey, well done out there, Osbourne. That's the fella, well done, mate. Anyway, Colonel Sanders as well, he was another fella who enjoyed counting chickens. The reason for this is because he wasn't actually a military gentleman, no. He would stand all the poultry in front of him and make them call out their number. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
you're going well, then, you know, you could talk for 5 minutes. As long as you're not interrupted. And very often, I mean, there's a sort of gentlemanliness in the game sometimes, particularly when the game is not too tight competitively, where they'll let someone go because they're being very interesting or very funny. And despite the fact they may be hesitating slightly or repeating slightly, they don't actually buzz.
I will show you how fair I am. I try to have the wisdom of Solomon, which is very difficult, in here. I was generous to you on that other challenge. I will now be generous to Paul and say, yes, that was a good challenge, Paul, and you have the subject back of 1 minute, 46 seconds, starting now.
In the future, some 400 years...
I knew it.
Yeah. Yes.
Well interjected, Ross. We give you a bonus point because we loved what you said, and the audience as well, so he gets a bonus for that. But Paul was interrupted, so he gets a point, and he keeps the subject, 43 seconds, 1 minute, starting now.
1 minute will be much longer than they are...
Ross, challenge.
We've already established. It's 1 minute.
In 400 years' time.
Yes, but how do you know that?
Because I'm a time traveller. Oh!
Well, Ross, I knew we'd get out of him eventually.
I don't know how I adjudicate on this one.
Nicholas, yes. Am I a time traveller or not? It's as simple as that.
No, you're not a time traveller, so Ross has it.
Yeah.
A minute is a fearsome amount of time. If you know you're dying on your feet and you're heading towards the rocks, a minute is a very, very long time. I think you have to almost forget where you are. I think you have to forget the audience, you have to forget the rules. You have to forget the fact these guys have got buzzers and just go, hoping that nobody... It's a bit like, you know, traffic cameras. You just hope the camera isn't on it. And you just press on, waiting for something to happen.
41 seconds. The subject is 1 minute, starting now.
Packet noodles take exactly 1 minute to cook. If you really want them to be nice, you can add oregano, basil... some dog food and mix that in. Possibly get some more.
Linda, you challenge.
Very slight hesitation.
Yes, there was. You start listing and you soon trip yourself up, don't you?
I don't know no foods.
Right.
I only know noodles. That's all I eat.
Well, I don't know how long a minute is. It should be 60 seconds. But what I do know is it. Sometimes I feel it is longer for me than it is for the other panellists. I do get that impression sometimes, Nicholas, that, it's a bit... Sometimes my minute just feels like an eternity and other people's a mere moment. It's fantastic when you do it, and it's a semi-religious thing. It's like you're speaking in tongues. You don't know where it comes from. Well, I don't anyway. It's fantastic.
Linda, you have a correct challenge, of course, and the point for that... And the subject is 1 minute, starting now.
1 minute. Salesmen often say, may I have 1 minute of your time, when what they really mean is, may I have all your money for some poxy timeshare, which of course...
Clement, challenge.
Repetition.
Of what?
May I and time and...
may I have...
My point is...
Yes, that what's your point?
Clement had 3 seconds.
Yes.
In which to make a speech.
Yes.
And I buzzed.
Yes.
Hesitation.
Yes.
He then said, now you've got 2 seconds.
But during that
he said
something.
What did he say? Nothing.
He did speak. He said a definite phrase. The full content I can't remember, but he did speak.
You're the chairman and you can't remember what the last speaker said?
It's going to be a rotten series, I can tell you.
You know, his buzzer isn't working. You can't remember. What chance have we got?
We won't have a chance in hell if you keep up this much longer. Right, Peter, shut up. I think in the old days with the Gogol, who were all my generation, Derek Nimmo, Peter Jones and Clement Freud and Kenneth Williams, there was a little bit more edge there because they were my contemporaries. And the new generation of comedians who've come in, starting with people like Paul Merton and then followed by Graham Norton, Tony Hawkes and Linda Smith and Ross Noble and all those other
very bright and clever comedians who've come in, and then we've also had Stephen Fry's come and done one or two occasions, and they have actually taken the show in a different direction, and I think now it's actually in many ways funnier than it was. But I strongly believe that if any program's going to evolve and achieve a longevity, it has to find a way to progress.
And sometimes, as I've just rehearsed, sometimes spontaneous rounds of applause are much better when they're rehearsed.
But Stephen, I'm not going to allow that.
Well, you're an old sweetie.
So, we're in because you're interrupted.
Thank you.
And
nobody's ever called him that before.
No. You have 49 seconds to tell us something about BBC Radio, Wendy, starting now.
I have had the good fortune to work for BBC Radio on several occasions. I always enjoy this as I see my dear friend Nicholas Parsons. A pleasure to see any of them.
I'm going to interrupt the game for just a minute. The man who thought up this programme, who devised it and produces it and rings bells in it, is Ian Messiter, and it seemed a pity that he should get away without having a go at this game himself. And anybody can judge him as he talks for 1 minute on how I came to think up this game without using the word I.
We were sitting in the bath one morning when we heard the telephone ring downstairs, and our wife went to answer it. And she said, 1 minute, please, he's in the bath. So we thought, that's a good title, he's in the bath, would do for any program. And we then went out and we bought a lot of buzzers, rather silly-looking instruments. And we put them in rows each side of microphones, and there the buzzers sit. And are we still talking? Have we finished yet?
No.
Clement Challenge.
I think it's now been established that 1 minute cannot be slow or fast, but is medium-paced 60 seconds. This game used to be called 1 minute Please before it became Just a Minute. And I am old enough to remember the very beginning when Ian Messiter...
Welcome to Just a Minute.
Bring to mind, I would mention Hadrian and Marcus Aurelius. Perhaps Elagabalus is an interesting example. He arrived in Rome, you know, on a dray and had a lot of makeup on. The senators are reputed to have made representations and indignant noises about this, but he held full sway and filled every post high wide. Gaul, Britain, Minorca, Majorca, all with posts with his favourite in charge.
I don't blame him, because I mean, after all, if you've got a bit of authority, you might as well flash it about and say, well, have a good time. Only here for a short while. I'll enjoy it while we can. And I think, when I look back on my own life, ah, yes, acts and victims, all power corrupts, that's true.